You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
25 minutes before 11 with me in this studio, one of my favorite people. Don't see enough of this man, but you know, I read him very often. He is jet lagged. I'm sure that his thoughts will definitely inspire some interesting ones from you as well. If you want to join the conversation, I'll tell you what it is about in a second. The lines will be open throughout. If you're wondering why I'm breathless, it's not because Xolela leaves me breathless. I was just running to the bathroom and back to be in time. Radio is very cool, but it's got no respect for biology. 011-883-0702 in Jersey and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Xolela, thanks so much for coming in. It's a wonderful surprise. I thought you were going to be
good
on the phone.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah.
You've been doing fascinating things, dude. You've been doing some really interesting things. I want to start with the issue that is most important to you at the moment, and then I've got one or two little surprise questions I'm going to throw in there for you. Reflecting on telling the stories of our people, your latest column entry is one that I've seen traveling quite well on social media spaces.
Oh, really?
One or two detractors, but for the most part, people are really enjoying what it is that you had said. For those folks who may have missed it, just give us a sense of what it is that you had articulated in your latest column.
Well, I'm trying to make actually a practical suggestion. There's this whole debate in the country about how do we transform or decolonize universities and bring in new knowledge. And I've always wondered why we don't do biographies. There are hundreds, literally, of people that we could write about and get students to actually start, say, at the honors level with a small biography, let's say, of S.E.K. Mkayi or Ntato Mutlana, or right? Mm. And that project could then grow over time into a master's thesis. And then it could grow into a PhD and it could become a book. And so somebody could actually, you know, devote 5 years of their life kind of working on this. And it's also there are people whose stories are, and I listed a number of them in this article that I wrote for the Sunday Independent. And it's also an interesting way of doing history. Because biography can introduce people to history in ways that may surprise you sometimes, you know, because individual lives are contradictory.
Absolutely. I was going to say that one of the beautiful points you make, Xolela, that I really enjoyed, and you see it in very good biographies such as Mark Kifisser's of Mbeki, is that if you only do political theory, you said, you will have a certain kind of approach to the question, what is JZ's political legacy? What is Mandela's political legacy? But the genre of biography gives you a different in. Contrast those methodologies for us.
I'm writing a biography of Nelson Mandela. And as you may know, as a black consciousness writer, I was, you know, quite critical of Madiba and the way he approached issues of race and all of that. Right? But I was doing that from an ideological position. But now that I'm doing his biography, I can sympathize with him in a way that I could not as a political partisan. Now I can say, oh, okay, this man grew up in the Transkei. And in the Transkei, there was a Victorian culture where he was brought up in the Tembu royal family, and there was a particular attitude to Europeans, and there were no whites in the Transkei, so there was no kind of experience of racism in his childhood, and because of that, he's able to deal with white people in a way that is quite different from the people who were scarred by racism. Mm. You know, so biography kind of enables you to enter into the life of a person and then explain that person. Now, there's no one way of doing that, right? So somebody else could write another biography and come up with a different theory. Mm. But the most important thing is to get the scholarship going. Mm. And there is so much we can do. There are so many people about whom, I mean, John Tengo Jabavu in the 19th century, the first black newspaper owner in this country. Walter Khubusana, the real founder of the ANC in 1890, not 1912, when they formed the South African Native, right? The South African Native Congress. There are no biographies of those people. I'm the first African. Can you imagine this? I am the first African to write a biography of Nelson Mandela.
So why is there a gap?
Because we don't do what we're supposed to do.
Why not?
I've been saying this for 20 years. You know, that we need to critique the colonial education system and how it excludes African knowledge, right? And that's why we need to do this work and put it in there. But we can't put it in there if we don't do the work. You know what I mean? So we have to do the work. And nobody's going to do it for us. But we have not been doing it. I'll tell you why we have not been doing it.
Why, are we just lazy?
We have, since 1994, we have had this view that what matters in life is money. And so, you know, a lot of people who could have gone into the academy decided, no, man, you know, I'm going into business, right? I'm going to make some money, right? But the thing with it, that was one thing. Hmm. It's a cultural development of the past 20 whatever years. The other one was politics, right? I'm going to go into the party. But we left the universities, right, dominated by the very people that we're complaining about, because we didn't go into those spaces. So there are strategic decisions that we have failed to make over the past 25 years. And all of the stuff that's happening in the country now, the quality of the ANC, has everything to do with this. That unless you invest in leadership, unless you invest in history, in discussions around values, at the 20 years down the line, you'll find that you've got nothing to go on.
Can I take a chance on you in the spirit of our acquaintanceship? When you're talking about how politics and the choices we've made to go into business partly explain why there may be a gap in the libraries when it comes to biographies of interesting black people, those are externalities, right, that explain that gap. But there are also factors inside the academy. You're not one who minces your word. Are you using many euphemistic sentences to say something far more blunt, which is the white academy isn't interested in black biography? And so if it was left to them, this gap will continue in the academy.
Oh, yes. I've been saying that almost every week, you know, for the past 5 years, that, you know, white academics are not interested, right? I've been raising these questions at UCT for the past 5 years. And Steve Biko once said, you cannot expect them to be interested for a whole variety of reasons. I mean, there are, to be perfectly, you know, fair, there are a very small number of white academics who've done incredible historical work, you know, Andre Odendaal, Jeff Barris, you can name them. But for the most part, the institutions, they don't care about this stuff. And that's why when I got to UCT in my social theory class, I said, you know, guys, when I went to university 30 years ago in sociology, I was reading Marx, I was reading Durkheim, I was reading Weber, Parsons, right? That was 30 years ago. I cannot be teaching the same thing in 2017. So I put in Mkai. And it has had an incredible impact on students.
But just to complete the circle, and I don't want to be race reductionist.
The point I'm making is I would be the last person to excuse white academics. They have controlled these institutions. They have been regurgitating the same material for decades. But I'm saying it is time for us now as black folk to actually say, here's what needs to be done.
Okay. No, that's fair enough, yeah. I wanted to ask a factual question there. Is there better focus on the biographies of white South Africans in the academy at all? In other words, is biography itself not taken seriously, or is it black biography that is not taken seriously?
It's biography in general. But as you know, when things come to black people, then they tend to be worse, right? For obvious historical reasons. The problem, I think, with biography in this country is it's done as an individual initiative. So you wake up one day, you're like, okay, I've lived my life, I want to write it.
And outside of the academy as well, right? Why is that? So it finds
outside of the academy.
Excellent narrative journalist will take up that project typically, black or white, and not an academic. Is it to be fair on the academy? And I say fair in inverted quotes, because obviously the academy's got to answer to rigorous standards of intellectual inquiry. Is it in part because of the way in which the liberal arts and the social sciences work the world over, Kolela, in this sense, that notwithstanding what you were saying about examples like Marxism, there is in general an obsession, particularly in liberal universities, with structural analysis, with group level analysis, so that even if one takes the race element out of this conversation, there's a general bias to make sense of society rather than the individual. And so the weird thing is that the kind of academic I would imagine that would be naturally curious about a biography would be someone who would, and this is a gross oversimplification, but I think you'll get the point, someone who maybe was a major in both, say, English literature and sociology.
Yeah.
Because they have a deep love of narrative, the individual texture, but they're not running away from structural analysis. And very often in the academy, there's this weird thing where if you are into individual narratives, if you read J.M. Coetzee and Mda, you don't do structural analysis and vice versa.
But it's in the South African academy. In the American academy, actually. I mean, you know, I'm on sabbatical now. I'm at Harvard. And I'm moving back between Harvard and the University of London.
Mm.
I am interacting with scholars at Harvard who were doing biography. I was at NYU the other day. There's a center for biography at NYU. There's a Leon Levy biography center at CUNY. I mean, their biography, you know, the problem is this, and I'm going to be blunt here, right, is that the bar that was set under apartheid, right, has continued to be the bar that determines the framework. In other words, it sets the standard, and the standard is very low. So we tell ourselves that we've got these great universities, right? But when you actually look at the quality and the content, yes, you can be number one in Africa, right? You can be number one in your neighborhood, right? But when you have to compare yourself in terms of the actual work, what is it that is being done? You look at the philosophy department where I work, right, at UCT, and you have people there who say, no, you know, there's nothing like African philosophy. And I'm like, have you ever heard of Kwame Anthony Appiah? You know, of Mudimbe? Of, you know, you can go on and on, right? But we've inherited this colonial framework that has set the standard. So we beat ourselves on the chest that we're great, but we're not. Mm. And that is why I'm challenging students, especially the Fees Must Fall and the whole decolonization movement, to do their PhDs, to connect with places like Harvard, to come back into the academy. And we can make the academy in this country much, much better than what it is.
Okay, 12 minutes before 11, you got a question for Kolela. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. Do you agree with him? What are your own reflections? Maybe you don't disagree sharply, just a disagreement, Nyana. Maybe you've got your own thoughts. Do you think we take the intellectual life projects as seriously as we should? Biography as a genre seriously enough? And if we don't, why is that, do you think? Give us a call on 011-883-0702 in Johannesburg and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567.
Eusebius Makaiser on 702. And Cape Talk.
So just a couple of questions that some people have put. Actually, it was a discussion on the Facebook page of Sakela Bulungu, of course, is now at Ford Hare. And most people there are very excited about what you are suggesting. It is practical. It is intellectually justified. It's morally justified to try and write the stories of our people. One or two people were saying, but actually there's already some stuff written, not enough, but you don't make enough acknowledgement of that. Omar Bachar was, for example, talking about how, you know, the Essay History Online project has got 1,000-word biographies. And of course he's right. I often find that a very useful, quick go-to site if I need to do background research for my radio production work. So there is a gap, but are you guilty of not acknowledging what has already been written, even if it's small?
I love Omar and he's done incredible work, right? Ndongela Masilela has done an amazing work in his website. So, I'm not here to you know, deny what people are doing. That's not how I operate. Hmm. What I'm saying is something completely different, which is that we need to institutionalize the staff in the universities.
Yeah.
We need to teach biographies. We need to produce students who can get out there and do the stuff. And of course, those students can work with Omar, can work with Ndongela, can work with a whole lot of people who are doing interesting stuff. So, you know, sometimes these are diversionary, you know, these are diversionary points. The real point is I love all of those people, but I'm suggesting that we need an institutional response to this.
The other thing, before I want to get back to the more interesting nerdish issues, is that the other sort of little bit of criticism that you've got, and criticism is a harsh word. It's a really lovely conversation. I know your social media is not your forte, but you'd have
I'm not on social media.
You'd have enjoyed what's going on there. No, but it can feed back into this discussion. You know, social media is not inherently dumb. And the other thing that people were saying there is, where are your receipts? You're a full-time professor. You're full-time in the academy. Yeah, it's lovely to critique. You know, sometimes you get political analysts will do that. They will write in a detachment about political analysts and say, political analysts have been doing. And they're like, dude, you're also a political analyst. So some people are saying, you are in the academy full time. Why don't you simply just demonstrate what we need to be doing and we'll embarrassingly take our cue from you?
I wrote the first biography of Steve Biko. So what are they talking about? I'm writing a biography of Nelson Mandela now. That's why I'm at Harvard. Hmm. So what are they talking about? I've written how many books? 9. So I don't have to explain myself when it comes to that. You know, I mean, my CV speaks for itself. People should stop these diversions because they are not only baseless, right? But that's how we tend to operate in this country. You know, instead of actually paying attention to the point. And the point I'm making is, let's do something. Mm.
Great stuff. Let's take a call, Kolela. We've got Sam on the line. How's it, Sam?
I'm very well, thank you, friends. And how are you doing?
I've never been better. What do you want to say?
My brother sitting there may recall me. It's Sam Alexander here, Mr. Nangum.
Hi, Sam.
You know, I've got a very interesting consideration, and that is in the curriculum that we deliver, and that is with changing mindset. We are using mainly the paradigms of white philosophers, etc. For example, when we speak about worldviews, we speak about the Newtonian worldview, or we speak about the Whiteheadian worldview. And my question has always been to my business, is there not something more local, more African that we can use? Because the classes are becoming more laden with African delegates, etc. Have you got any ideas there?
Yes, actually, just read my column this coming Sunday. you know, for example, I mean, I have this book idea that I have in mind to write about citizenship, democracy, and nation in South Africa, right? But you know what I want to do, Eusebius? Mm. The general tendency is, okay, the first stop is Rousseau, right? Then we say, okay, what did Locke say? And then what did de Tocqueville say, right? Mm-hmm. And we demonstrate how much we know that stuff. What I want to do is, what did black Africans in the 1800s, when the vote was extended in 1853, what did they say and write about what it means to be a citizen, mm-hmm. what it means to have a democratic society, what is a nation? And guess what? The material is there, mm-hmm. because the newspapers of the 1800s are in the archive, and these folks, they wrote books. So I'm saying that in the political science department at Wits or at UCT, you could actually completely reimagine how you teach democratic theory by just going at what Khubusana and what Jabavu and what Soga and what Plaatje wrote, because it is there, mm-hmm. and it's on the same concepts and the same themes, you know what I mean? So there is so much, my brother, that we can do. Sure. It just boggles the mind that we are not doing it, which is why I'm bringing Gugi Wationgo to South Africa.
I will talk about that in a second. I'll definitely make sure you will have time for that important plug. I'm fascinated by your interest in Madiba. And when I was rereading your latest column along the way while searching for it again on the internet, because I read it in the hard copy first, I found an interview that I think was done with you by a journalist somewhere over the last week or two. And you commented a little bit about this project on Madiba. And one of the things you said, and obviously we're going to wait for the book, but I'm already intrigued by the intuition that you regard Mandela as a tragic figure.
Yes, yes. Well, you know,
including especially on race in
classical Greek mythology, right? I mean, the idea of the hero, and of course it goes back even to the Egyptians, but the idea of the hero is a collective idea. It's a communal idea. Mm. So the hero is a tragic figure in that sense, right? But the hero is never on the stage alone. It's always the hero in interaction with the chorus and the audience, right? But what happened with Madiba is that he was turned from a tragic hero in that sense into what I call a romantic hero. And of course, that was what has happened in the history of tragedy. And he became this individual spokesperson for all black people. And I'm trying to push against that and say, for example, that Mandela comes very late in the history of black political thought, right? So you would have had, before Mandela, 100 years of black people talking and writing and debating the questions around race. Mm. You know, even just shortly before Mandela, in the 1930s, you had the All-African Convention. How many of our students know about people like D.D.T. Jabavu, people like I.B. Tabata, whose book, by the way, The Awakening of a People, must be a compulsory text in any undergraduate. But who knows about Tabata? Mm. Who knows about, you know, Z.K. Matthews and what he wrote? So, and of course, Anton Lambert, I could go on and on. Mm. But, so the idea, so what biographers of Mandela did, and all of them white, right? They came at him from that perspective that this is what Mandela said and thought about race, and this is what everybody should say and think about race. And so by writing biography, they've written the biography of an individual. And biography at its best is the biography of a society, of a people, of ideas.
So the irony is they didn't even do biography as a genre justice, because the insight that you deliver in this interview with a journalist, which I think is compelling, is that you can either take the views off the shelf detached from the life narrative and then use political theory, your own convictions to give a perspective on the man's beliefs detached from context, or you can give texture. And when you do that, you may not necessarily now agree with the content of Madiba's views on race at one point, but certain new interesting shades come in.
You understand?
A word like tragedy wouldn't have popped up if you only had your theoretic lens.
Yeah, it wouldn't. And you see, the notion of the tragic hero is actually not a negative notion. It's just that, you know, the way that the word is used in everyday
That's
language.
That's why we need the
right?
long form, so you can unravel all of that.
Yeah. Exactly.
Khalela, you and I need an hour of conversation, my friend. I love your brain, your passion, but I'm going to give you 30 seconds. There's an exciting event next week at the Great Hall. What is it?
At Wits, Ngugi wa Thiong'o, who is my dearest, intellectual, is coming to speak at Wits University on Thursday, March 2nd, at 5:30.
Yeah.
And then at UCT on Friday, the following day, March 3rd, 5:30.
I'm going to tweet those details. I've got the posters.
And we're doing this with the National Institute for the Humanities and Social Sciences. Mm. I approached them and they gave me the money. I wish more people could give money for this project, by the way.
Absolutely. Patrice, if you're listening,
yeah, Tokyo. Exactly. But the idea is that Ngugi wa Thiong'o, for example, has revolutionized the way we think about knowledge, the way we think about the role of language, for example, in the production of knowledge. So, and he wrote, of course, the classic text, Decolonizing the Mind, right? Mm. So why not go to the source and have him come to speak to us and share his ideas. So I hope the students and the academics will come and engage with Ngugi next.
Okay, well, I'm going to tweet those details. I'll put them on Facebook. We're also trying to make sure that the interview happens. So hopefully my producer will interview Ngugi, and perhaps we can make the circle bigger. I will include in that interview also an appreciation of Ngugi by you, if you can give us an extra bit of time, and then we'll bring that back to the air. Xolela, thanks for everything that you do.
Well, thank you, my brother. Take care.